My name is Billy Eichner, and I feel over the goddamn moon about being Conan O'Brien's friend.
That's the angriest anyone's ever said that. Well, how you feeling today? Over the goddamn moon.
I am so fucking grateful. Thanks for throwing me a bone. A crumb.
Fall is here, hear the yell. Back to school, ring the bell. Brand new shoes, walking blues. Climb the fence, books and pens. I can tell that we are gonna be friends. Yes, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hello and welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, the never-ending quest to find someone who will meet with me outside of a podcast studio.
You'll get there.
And no share a bowl of soup. Everyone in here, have you noticed this? Everybody in here talks a good game.
Yeah.
Not much happens outside the podcast studio. No. And the times that I reach out, well, let's just say I don't hear much back.
Really? There have been a couple times where you've actually had a thing with the guest, like, oh, I'm really going to talk to you. We're going to go out to dinner and that kind of thing. And those have not happened.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. And that's something I learned in the old late night game. I'd get fooled because they'd come out, you know, would welcome the guest and the guest would come out, the star would come out and they'd lock eyes with me and smile and embrace me and sit and hang on every word. And those are all the cues that you get in high school when someone really likes you.
Mm.
But I'm in a fake environment.
Yeah.
And so afterwards I'd think, you know, really likes me, Harrison Ford.
He
thinks I'm the bee's knees. He hung on every word. And then later on when I see him squeezing avocados at a Ralph's and I jump out and say, it's me, your old buddy, and hug him. Suddenly I'm getting karate chopped in the throat
right.
by a rugged leading man.
Oh man, he's
that's great. Not right.
No.
Now some people have said, don't jump out at people and hug them.
Right, right.
Approach quietly and introduce yourself as a grown-up. But no. Mm. I think the flaw is not with me.
Well, you said in the very beginning you want to share a bowl of soup. So I think that's problematic too.
Yeah.
I don't think you should text people and be like, hey, you want to share a bowl of soup?
Something that involves slurping and hunched shoulders.
And germs going into the same bowl. It's just, I don't know. You gotta get a new approach.
Yeah, why don't you do what everybody else is doing and play pickleball or something?
Yeah, you know what? I don't know this pickleball thing.
Either. Oh.
And I've had people explain it to me.
My sister-in-law is deep.
And I know that it's become kind of a mania.
Yeah.
Everyone's playing pickleball. My only question is, do you have to take off your shirt?
What?
Why?
Well, I know I saw a photograph somewhere of people playing pickleball and they were all stripped to the waist.
What?
Oh, just the fellas, but I thought, well, I can't take off.
I haven't been able to hide the pickle.
What's that?
I think that was hide the pickle.
You always go to the same place. You dirty, dirty man. I just want to make sure that I always have to be dressed like in a suit.
Right.
Whatever I play.
Like a real jock.
Suit. Like a business suit.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I don't know that. I don't know anything about the game,
Me either.
People go nuts for it.
Yeah. Sweeping the nation. Well, it sounds like a room full of non-pickleball players. So
it's
good.
We're
tired
of getting anything going here. I've played it a couple times. I'm sorry. Oh. I mean, I have played it with, like, my sister-in-law is really into it. And when you get into it, you get into it. I think it's like playing tennis, but it's not as much movement. And so it feels like it's still athletic, but it's not tennis.
Is it just boomer tennis?
It might be kind of
It's slacker tennis.
Yeah.
I think it's tennis, but there's no one has to really move. Or, and at any moment you can just walk away, but still insist on getting paid.
And it's doubles usually.
Wait a minute. I switched topics. It became about the economy. These kids today.
Yeah.
This reminds me, and this is just completely random, but you know that Sony used to play dodgeball.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did we talk about that here? I don't think we did.
I think this started post dodgeball
Sona
life.
When Sona, you know, back in the day, pre-podcast, this is before you met your husband, the wonderful Tack, Sona was in a dodgeball league.
Yeah.
And the thing I remember the most is every time I asked her, how did it go? She'd say, I got red carded.
Yeah.
Because she was constantly losing it people.
I was.
And this is something that I want to explain because people listen to the podcast and I've had people come up to me and say, oh, you know, Sona is such a saint that she puts up with your foolishness.
Destroy that right now.
No, not destroy it. But people have this idea that, oh, Sona's got a book out that's doing really well. And Sona's this and Sona's that. What they don't.
I'm an author.
Really? Is New York Times bestseller really a way to tell how a book's doing? Oh, wait. Says here it's exactly the way to tell how a book's doing.
Okay. It's actually New York Times, which is a watch store in Times Square. It's on their bestseller list.
No, but she's had all this success and she's, you know, she's got her own, you're probably selling foods now.
What?
On the internet.
Yeah. No, doing the least amount of work I can.
But anyway, people don't realize that Sona has a terrible temper and it just, when there, you can hear it snap. Now, did it go away? Be honest.
There's very few people that can bring it out of me, and you are one of them.
Oh.
But for the most part, I'm pleasant to everybody else, except when, like this.
I'm just putting a finger up.
I know.
To make a point.
I know. But you do things, and you just, like, press these little buttons.
Okay.
And you know what to do, and it, and I start to see red.
But be honest. Would you say that when you would lose your temper, this is before this wonderful life that you have now, you'd really...
I go fucking crazy.
You go fucking crazy. And I've seen it happen. I've seen it happen.
I never got physical. I never got into a fight.
We've talked about this on the show.
I've yelled at a lot of people.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah.
But I think now I've seen her transform. I haven't seen that side of you in quite a while.
I do breathing exercises now. That's serious. I do breathing exercises.
And this is for your temper?
Yeah.
Have your kids seen it? Have they seen mom lose it yet?
No. I really don't want to lose it in front of them. I if I'm on the road and I'm driving and someone cuts me off or upsets me, I just immediately just start breathing. If someone pisses me off.
I've been in the passenger seat with Sona when someone would just slightly cut us off. And what she does, what she always says, which is the clue that she's been triggered is, really? She goes, really? And then she suddenly, you're Gene Hackman in The French Connection. You're driving about 150 miles an hour through 1970s New York, which is strange.
Impressive.
Yeah, she actually changes the time space around us. And you're going under that raised subway that's no longer there. Yeah.
Suit.
And yeah, exactly. And we're, she's like, really? And then we're going and I'm with her. A national treasure who could be lost at any moment.
Oh, God.
But anyway, it's horrifying.
Oh, well, man. Don't.
But you're not that person anymore.
I'm not. But can you admit that you do things sometimes to just rile me up?
My guest today is a very funny actor and comedian.
Nice.
We got to get going.
I know, but you know you do. Oh. You know you do.
Nope, not at all.
You know you do.
Nope.
He's doing it right now.
He's doing it right now.
Go. You're maybe a little less Gabby right now.
Go, Sona, go. Unleash. Go.
It's like the
let it out.
Maybe.
Let it out. Let it out.
Maybe you should just.
I think the Conesy's laughing at you.
Maybe a little less talky-walk.
I think the Conesy's laughing at you.
I'm going to breathe.
Maybe a little less Sona talk. That's a breathing exercise?
Yeah, I think you're giving birth.
You're like a hobo sleeping under an apple tree. Well, that was a good pie I stole.
Oh, you're the worst. You know that you are the worst.
Right.
You know that you are. That's okay, though.
I'm the best at being the worst. My guest today, very funny actor and comedian you know from Billy on the Street. Now he stars in the hilarious new movie, Bros, which he also co-wrote and produced. I'm excited he's here with us today. Billy Eichner, welcome. Billy, first of all, I adore you and I'm so thrilled that you're here.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on the podcast. I was like a good boy doing my research today. Not that I have to, because I know you so well and I've been a fan for so long. And then this little tidbit comes across my page as I'm scanning through info on you and bio stuff that you were a waiter for a while. And I was thinking, you as a waiter would terrify the shit out of me.
I was a terrible waiter.
And I would think so. Yeah.
I didn't last long. Uh-huh. I waited tables in New York when I was a struggling actor. You know, a lot of my friends were doing that. So they got me a job waiting tables. They were all pretty good at it. And I was terrible. And then I remember the manager after one of my first training days, I sat down at the bar and I was just, my brain was fried. I have so much respect for waiters in Manhattan, especially. Yeah. I mean, I'm a native New Yorker. I love New York more than anything, but we can be awful, you know, especially, you know, the rich ones. Uh-huh. And I mean, that's just the truth. I experienced it. And then I sat down at the bar at the end of the day and the manager came up to me, this very nice young woman, and she said, "You had a really hard day, huh?" You know, because she saw I was struggling.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I did. And I quickly kind of pivoted to being a bartender, which was a much better job.
Well, that's the other thing is a surly bartender. There's something cool and edgy about a surly bartender. And it makes sense to me because you're asking for your alcohol. And if they treat you badly, it somehow makes sense to me.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Like,
well,
oh, here's your alcohol.
The bartender has power.
Yes.
You know, like people want that drink. There's only one of you or two of you, so they want your attention. It's a much sexier job.
Yes. Tom Cruise in Cocktail.
I was just thinking Cocktail because we're the same generation.
And also all I think about is that movie Cocktail
all the time. You know what was also from that movie Cocktail? Kokomo.
Yes.
By the Beach Boys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gonna take it fast and then we'll take it slow. That's where we wanna go. Way down to Coca, Bermuda, Jamaica.
All right.
Anyway, they all vote for Trump, so fuck them.
Oh, no.
I think most of the Beach Boys are MAGA.
Yeah.
Oh, Beach Boys or Proud Boys would be a fun game to play. Not John Stamos, probably. He plays the drums.
The Beach Boys, it's the only rock group I've ever gone to see where they all came out and they were wearing blue blazers.
By the way, the only rock group you've ever seen is the Beach Boys?
No. They had blue blazers.
I see.
And they weren't, and I never did go see them. I was painting a little bit of a word picture there.
I see.
But I think you as a waiter, I just find if you came up to my table, said, "What, do you want to hear about the specials?
Yeah.
Do you want to hear about them?" I'd be so intimidated. I'd say, "You just tell us what we're going to eat, and then I'm going to leave the money and not even eat it.
What do you want, a beverage, you fucking asshole? What do you need, an extra spoon? Go fuck yourself."
I want to compliment you because—
Thank you.
You can't—
Well, that's all we have.
Well, I've been waiting to hear that. Yes. But you didn't say that to BJ Novak.
You're not even curious what the compliment is. I love that.
No
interest. You're just happy it's a compliment.
Yep.
No, first of all, I've known you a long time. Always consistently hilarious. And then you did this podcast way back in June of 2019. So that's like a long time, even before COVID.
Right.
And when you were on that podcast, first of all, you said you had mixed feelings about being my friend, which is fine.
I've evolved.
You've evolved.
Yes. The culture has evolved. You know, during COVID, I sat around, I did some real soul searching, and I said, maybe I am okay with Conan O'Brien existing in the world.
Well, so one good thing came out of COVID.
Yeah, exactly.
On that podcast, you described this project that you were working on.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you something. Everybody does that. I mean, you came on and you said, well, I have this dream, which is you wanted to make this movie and you wanted to make a romantic comedy, you know, a gay romantic rom-com.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, yeah, but everybody says they've got a project in mind that's going to be available someday in the future if all goes well.
Right.
Here you are now back on the podcast and you've made the movie and you're promoting.
We made the movie. It is coming out. It's not only coming out, it's coming out in a wide release made by Universal Studios in thousands of theaters all over North America. And then strangely, the world.
Right.
Except the countries that are homophobic, which is interesting.
Wait.
There won't be a Saudi Arabian premiere of my gay rom-com soon.
That's where I wanted to see it.
Well, I'm sorry.
No, I did. I called the Cineplex Odeon in Saudi Arabia. Aww. And I've said, I want my ticket to Bros.
Nope.
The Billy Eichner groundbreaking rom-com.
You booked the ticket.
And they were kept saying it is not available. And I said, that's a glitch.
Nope, not a glitch. That's just how it is in certain parts of the world. But I'm happy that it's getting released elsewhere where they don't hate gay people.
But this is landmark because, first of all, I mean, I want to talk about the whole arc of your career, because that's the kind of time we have.
Yeah.
I've booked 6 hours for this.
I'm going to need more than that, but okay.
No, I looked into it. 6 hours will cover it. But I'm very excited for you because your mission statement with this movie was, you said you're not interested in depicting a version of queer life that is palatable. Mm-hmm. And I thought that is so intriguing and fascinating to me. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, Bros, which is the rom-com I have coming out, produced by Judd Apatow, who, as all of you probably know, has made some of the funniest movies of the past 20 years, Bridesmaids and Trainwreck and 40-Year-Old Virgin, and the list goes on. And I wrote it with Nick Stoller, and Nick directed it, and he directed Forgetting Sarah Marshall and Neighbors. And, you know, these guys have a great legacy of making great comedies. And Nick came to me back like 5 years ago and said, I want my next movie to be a romantic comedy, but I think it would be cool if it was about a gay couple. Mm-hmm. But he acknowledged that he's not gay. And he asked me if I would write it with him and I could star in it if all went well and he would direct it. And I said, obviously, yes, a huge opportunity, one that I never saw coming in my life. But the first thing I said to Nick is, even before I knew what the story of the movie would be, I said, it has to be authentic, right? You can't just make When Harry Met Sally and think you can just swap in two gay guys and have the story play out the same way, because it wouldn't. Because, you know, yes, there is a lot of overlap in straight relationships and gay relationships, but also it is a little different. Mm-hmm. Two men together is different. And there's a lot of comedy to be mined from that. And also a lot of, you know, poignant moments and more thought provoking moments. And it's just a different experience. And I think a lot of the LGBTQ characters we've seen, and we're seeing way more, obviously, than we used to, especially in streaming and in indie films and on the internet, of course. And that's fantastic. That is a wonderful thing. But so much of it is done with an eye towards making us these like cutesy, two-dimensional characters that really are nothing like the actual gay men I know in my life.
Right.
Or like me. You know, I watch a lot of those shows and a lot of those sitcoms. And even when they're very funny, I think, I don't know who those people are. You know, those are gay characters designed to not freak out straight people.
Right.
And I give straight people a lot more credit than that. Yeah. I have a lot of straight friends. My show, Billy on the Street, that I've done for years, has a huge fan base among straight people. Conan, you are theoretically straight. You know, you've always
you know what? I go in and out. I don't know what that means.
Everyone does now.
You find some guys attractive, I think. And you've spoken very openly about it.
I'm very open about, you know, there are men where I totally get it.
Yeah.
And like Brad Pitt, I just think like, that's a really good looking guy.
Yeah.
You know, so I call him and it gets weird.
Oh, you know? Right. Exactly. Yeah, and then, you know, I won't go there. But
I just did. I went there in my head.
I just thought, I don't think we're giving straight people enough credit. Like, funny is funny. If you make a really funny Judd Apatow movie that happens to be about a gay couple, then straight people will love that. And it's not only funny, it's kind of fascinating.
Yes.
Because you're getting a peek into a world, a culture of dating, of love, of sex that you think you might know, but you don't really know.
Right.
And that was really important to me. I thought that would be exciting and hilarious. And I'm happy to say, so far, you know, when we do early screenings of the movie, a lot of the audience is straight. Most of the world is still straight. And they love it. It's really funny. It's just a fucking funny movie.
Okay, watch the language.
Why? Because I'm gay?
Yes! It's okay when straight people swear.
BJ Novak said every curse word on here.
I think I'm pretty evolved. But I still believe that gay people shouldn't swear, but straight people should.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Conan O'Brien, and I just got canceled.
welcome to Newsmax, the new home of Conan O'Brien.
That's the only thing I've carved out, is that swearing is only for straight people. No, but is it possible that the first wave of representation in, you know, on sitcoms needed to be that way, that there needed to be an evolution, or there needed to be a first wave that was more, I want to just say, user-friendly for people, that, you know, starting in like, I don't know, the late 80s, early 90s, it just, and this is the way it kind of maybe had to lay out, where now we can get the point where you, Billy, can make a movie that really is telling it from a real point of view,
yeah,
as opposed to let's water this down.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. There has been an evolution, and I'm really grateful that, you know, when I went to Judd and Nick and I said that I wanted it to be really authentic, it's a Judd Apatow movie. His movies are like wild and raunchy and fun and also very heartwarming and uplifting. And I just said it once. I wanted it to be all of those things, and there's no reason it shouldn't be. And they said, yeah, let's just go for it. Like, if it's honest, it'll be funny and relatable to everyone. And we're just in a weird industry that made two movies about a talking hedgehog before they made one gay rom-com. You know what I mean? Right. So
I have my own hedgehog movie coming out.
No one worried about whether or not Sonic the Hedgehog was relatable. We made 50 movies about dinosaurs. Prehistoric extinct creatures, and we never made one gay rom-com. Nobody said, God, I hope that Velociraptor is endearing to straight people.
Good point.
Yeah.
So the Velociraptor is going to rip off the kid's throat and then shoot acid into his eyes to blind him.
No one ever said, is Middle America ready for dinosaurs? But that's the question that lingers over a movie about, like, two actual human beings
right.
who walk the earth, you know, meeting and falling in love and, you know, driving each other crazy the way, you know, people do.
Thinking right now, because something I wanted to address is that there's so many people out there that would look at you right now coming out with this movie and having the career that you have that would say, okay, Billy, how do I get where you are? How do I achieve what you've achieved? And one of the things that you've done that I'm a big believer is that you took control.
You know, I went to Northwestern. I was a theater major. You know, I just wanted to be kind of a typical actor. I never even thought of myself as a writer or a comedian. Then I got to New York. I mean, I grew up in New York, and then after college, went back to New York to start my career, quote unquote. And, you know, there's millions of people trying to be actors. And I realized very early on that if I just stood in line waiting at this open call with hundreds of other actors for like the regional tour of Brigadoon or whatever it was, yeah, which I didn't even want to do. Although shout out to everyone in the cast of the regional tour of Brigadoon. They're wonderful.
I don't want to do what you're doing, but shout out.
Yeah.
I find the way you've spent your life a waste of time.
That's not
but
what
here's
I said.
Your props.
That is not what I said, but it's just not what I wanted to do.
Yes. Yeah.
And
a never ending purgatory. No, I'm kidding. Please, this is on me now, not on you.
I love the current touring cast of Brigadoon. No, I don't know if that's even touring. But I'm not here to talk about Brigadoon.
Let me get this straight. So Billy's new movie is called Brigadoon. It's about a magical land. Wait a minute, I got that wrong.
So I basically started to write for myself, and and I was good at it. And I had a live stage show that I did in New York, which is where the Billy on the Street videos started. I would show those videos on a screen. This is before YouTube even existed. This is like 2004, 2005. But then an interesting thing happened where a lot of folks in the industry would come and they would acknowledge that I was talented or that they thought I was funny, that the audience was laughing a lot, that I was unique and this, that, and the other thing. But it was always, you know, we don't know what to do with you.
Right.
Or you're very New York. And a lot of times in both overt ways and subtle ways, I was sent the message that I was just too gay.
Yeah.
Right. I was being openly gay on stage. I was talking about gay sex. Now everyone's talking about gay sex.
Right.
But this is 2003. Right.
This is back when you were losing roles to dinosaurs.
Exactly. Dinosaurs were fucking on screen, but I wasn't allowed to.
Okay. Brontosaurus on Stegosaurus was fine.
Yeah, that was fine. A lot of fanboys jerking off to that. But two actual humans having sex who happened to be men was alienating. So that message was sent to me many times.
Uh-huh.
But then what happened was the internet came along and I put my videos online. And after a little while, they went viral and very viral. And I was able to point to all of those people in the industry and say, hey, I'm not to this or to that. This video has millions of views.
Right.
These views aren't coming exclusively from gay people watching in New York City. Look at the comments. They're coming from all over the country and all over the world. And that's when they finally put me on TV. I needed those numbers to point to and say, hey, I have proof that I am not this little niche thing that you assume I am because I'm gay.
Do you ever think about, let's say somehow there's a, whatever, a wrinkle in time and you're born in the 30s or whatever, you come of age in the 40s or 1950s and you have all the talent and ability you have now, but there's no internet, there's no, there's no YouTube, there's no way to you yourself take control. Do you know what you would have become?
I don't know. You know, I think about that all the time and it's just, and that weighed really heavily on me during the movie. And if you see the movie, I don't want to give it away, but I do speak to this at one point. You know, I'm 43 years old. So when the movie comes out, I'll be 44. So I'm kind of in this interesting midway point between a generation of LGBTQ people and gay men specifically who really saw the world change. Like when they grew up, it was such a repressed time. They, a lot of them probably can't even imagine the world that we live in today. You know, even though there are still problems and we're still fighting for our rights still, the evolution that has occurred is really remarkable, right? They lived through the AIDS epidemic. There's a lot to unpack there. Then you have a younger generation now, and you see them all over the place of LGBTQ people and Gen Z queer kids, which is amazing. But they stepped into such a different world, such an evolved, accepting world. And again, a world where, thanks to Clarence Thomas and other like fucked up, homophobic, you know, self-loathing weirdos, like we're still fighting for our rights and our rights are still very fragile. But again, that generation, a lot to do with the internet, you know, came of age in a time when, you know, things were, if not easy, a lot easier. And I'm kind of weirdly perched in between these two generations that have had a very different experience being LGBTQ. And I wanted the movie to speak to that in a way, because we need to acknowledge, and by the way, I'm making the movie sound like fucking, you know, out of Africa or something. Like, it's like it sounds so fucking serious. This is a funny Judd Apatow movie, everybody. It's dinosaurs, it's Sonic the Hedgehog, it's everything you want it to be. But just speaking about it seriously for a moment, because it is a historic movie, you know, you do have to acknowledge those generations of people, and Hollywood, especially an industry which has so often patted itself on the back for being progressive and gay friendly, quote unquote. You know, it's a cliche to say that like everyone in Hollywood is gay, you know, that it's this progressive lefty, you know, culture. But really, when you look at the actual history of it, you know, just voting for a Democrat doesn't mean that you are treating LGBTQ people correctly on the day to day. And what you see in Hollywood are generations of actors who were stuck with one of two choices: be incredibly bold and come out of the closet publicly and have your professional dreams disappear because Hollywood did not give opportunities to people. They did not believe gay could play straight. They did not believe gay people want, like, that the majority of the audience wanted to see gay people at all. They made people uncomfortable. If you did get a role, it was horribly stereotypical. You were the butt of the joke. And that was, for many years, the best you were going to do.
Right.
Or you had to live some Rock Hudson style life, where if you wanted a big career as a movie star or TV star, especially if you wanted to play straight roles, which were the only roles that really existed at the time, you had to live this weird double life, pretend you were dating women publicly and then secretly live your secret gay life that you were not supposed to talk about, you know, that you could go live in some weird gay enclave somewhere when no one was looking, when the cameras weren't on. And I can only imagine that's the best those guys could do. That's what they were offered. Like, those were their choices. But what horrible choices to have to make.
Yeah.
Right. And now I don't have to make those choices. Right. And Bros is really a moment to celebrate the fact that we have come a really long way, that the entire movie is made up of openly LGBTQ actors, the entire cast. It's a first. This movie is a first in many ways, and that's one of them. And that's when you look at the history of it, you know, a 20-year-old queer kid now who may not know the history may say, oh, all right, well, I see gay people everywhere. They're all over my phone. They're all over TV. But if you know the history of Hollywood, especially major studio filmmaking, that is huge. That is a huge moment.
It's very hard. I mean, and also I think you're making the point, and I would agree, that it's impossible to expect someone who's 20 or 22 today to completely understand, because they just haven't lived it.
I do get inspired by that generation, though, because I always thought I was very bold and outspoken. But they really push the boundaries, especially when it comes to sex and being very open about it, and queer sex and gay sex. And I sometimes see what's posted on Instagram from my younger gay friends, and I'm like, wow, okay.
Oh, so suddenly you're the old school marm.
No, exactly. No, I'm like,
I don't think that's appropriate.
I'm like Mrs. Garrett all of a sudden. And they're like Trudy and Natalie running wild on roller skates throughout the house. And I'm like, girls, I don't know if this is okay.
But it is okay.
You're the modern Mrs. Garrett. I love it. I've always wondered, what is Billy? Yes. You're the Mrs. Garrett
that
of our time.
R.I.P. Charlotte Ray. We both went to Northwestern, by the way. And if only Mrs. Garrett were alive to see Bros, put that on the poster. But no, there's the younger kids, the younger queer kids are inspiring me. It's like, okay, we can have a few sex scenes in Bros and people will embrace that. And it's actually really fun and exciting, and it's okay. We don't have to be scared of that anymore. And I'm happy. I need that push from that generation myself a little bit.
You know, you were talking about the beginning, you're meeting all this resistance, you're making these videos, but you don't know. You know, I certainly had this throughout my 20s. Is this going to work? Am I going to make it?
Yeah.
I had it into my 30s. Like, is this going to gel? Do I have a career? It's terrifying. Yeah.
And you still really haven't answered that.
To be fair, you know, it's funny. I have not. And that's how it feels to me all the time. Yeah. But I know that early on, you did have people that saw something. I know Joan Rivers saw something in you early on, and she really encouraged you, right?
Yeah. Yeah, she was the greatest. My first real TV job was a pilot for Bravo that did not get picked up. Because in 2006, if you were gay and wanted to be on TV, they shipped you off to Bravo. literally. It was like an LGBTQ orphanage. It was like, you're talented, but you're a gay man.
I just picture them shoving you into a giant FedEx tube and then putting Bravo on it.
Yeah.
And dropping it in the mail.
That's literally, and it was so odd because I was on stage in New York doing, you know, this sort of Billy on the Street style persona, which I eventually, you know, captured in the videos that we did. But that started on stage. So it was this very absurdist, subversive thing that I was doing. It was not Bravo.
Right.
Right. But simply because I was gay, they were like, all right, well, maybe Bravo will do something with you. That was always the answer at the time, which is very funny. But also when you think about it, kind of fucked up, you know.
Right. Right.
I remember pitching a few shows to Comedy Central at the time, and the shows revolved around me. So, you know, they would revolve around a gay man. One was a scripted show. One was Billy on the Street, I think. Mm-hmm. And what was said to my face was, well, you're brilliant. We think you're hilarious. We obviously can't do that here. But I think if you go to Bravo, you'll have a home run.
Yeah.
Like someone said that to my face, thinking that was like a helpful thing. Mm-hmm. And then years later, he actually apologized for it after I was successful. But
that's good. I always do award points.
Yeah.
I've had people say terrible things to me in the early 90s and then come back later on.
Yeah.
And admit, own it, and say I was wrong, and then later come back and say I was right. It just keeps coming.
Yeah.
And this is my dad, by the way.
Oh, it's a vicious cycle.
Here's the old twist ending. So this episode brought to you by O. Henry.
So sure enough, Bravo did put me on a pilot in 2006, and the pilot was called Joan Rivers Straight Talk. And the idea was, it was a primetime version of The View, but instead of Barbara Walters and four different types of women, it was going to be Joan Rivers and four different types of gay men talking about pop culture and politics, a panel show, basically. And they cast me on the pilot. So Joan came to my live show. You know, I auditioned for it and she really liked me. And then she came to check me out on my live show. And she really just loved what I did. She really got me.
Yeah.
And we did that pilot. Andy Cohen was on that pilot before he had his own show. He was on the panel. Elsie Granderson, who was a sports columnist, I believe, and broadcaster, and another guy. And it didn't get picked up, unfortunately, but it was an amazing experience. And I got close with Andy Cohen, who's still a good friend. And I got really close with Joan. Mm-hmm. And she really became like a mentor to me. I mean, I could go on and on about how insanely supportive she was for no reason. The pilot didn't get picked up. She had no reason to deal with me. And yet she really was so helpful. Joan, you know, Joan, this was a few years before Joan had her resurgence, mm-hmm. if you remember. And, you know, Joan had been blacklisted from a lot of the late night talk shows. Like, mm-hmm. you know, we know this story, and she hadn't done The Tonight Show in many years, and Letterman hadn't had her on in many years.
Just to refresh people's memory who don't know, it was because she had been a huge star as a guest on Johnny Carson.
Guest host.
That's what I mean, a guest host. Yeah. And that was appointment television. When Joan yep. Rivers was going to host The Tonight Show and Johnny Carson was taking a break, and we're going way back into the 80s, but mm-hmm. it was an event because yep. she took the oxygen out of the room. She was so funny, and it was a huge event. And then she went on to do her own show, and that was seen as a betrayal.
Yeah. She did one of the first shows on Fox.
Yeah.
Right. When Fox started, she did her own late night show. Johnny wasn't leaving the show, his own show at that point. So Joan went and did her own show, and he got extremely mad and basically had her blacklisted from late night TV for the rest of, you know, her career up until, I don't know, like 10 years before she died. And so she did have a career resurgence, though, and Letterman did have her back on, and Fallon had her on The Tonight Show for the first time in many years. Kimmel had her on, and no one knew who I was at that point. And Joan told me, she said, "I'm about to do all the late night shows for the first time in decades. Put your Billy on the Street videos, put some of your favorite ones on a DVD and make copies and leave them at my apartment. And I am going to bring the producers of all of those shows your DVD and tell them you have to know this Billy Eichner guy. Watch these videos." She had been blacklisted from late night talk shows, which was so heartbreaking to her, for decades. And on her first time back making the rounds, she reached out to me and said, "I'm going to drop off your DVDs and let these people know who you are." And years later, after she died, when I ended up doing Letterman myself and doing Kimmel myself, I remember the showrunners at those shows said, "You know what's so funny? A few years ago, Joan Rivers was here and dropped off DVDs of you and told yeah. us about you before we knew who you were." And which is just an incredible thing to do. It was so generous. And,
well, it's clearly she, mm-hmm. I mean, first of all, this is someone who knew talent. She had, I mean, her own story is so incredible.
Yeah.
And what she had to put up with and what she had to overcome. Mm-hmm. There are people who are very passionate about how it should work. And when they see someone who's good, they really feel compelled to get the word out on them, which is a yeah. great quality and not always common.
Yeah.
I've spent a whole career trying to crush young talent.
Yeah. And you have.
Successfully. There's so many very talented young people that have never made it because of me.
That's right.
And this was just me feeling insecure, and I don't regret it.
It was part of your strategy.
It was part of my strategy, and it helped elevate me to crush them.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You did it.
Yeah. So many people, you'll never, ever see them. Never yeah. know who they are. Yeah. I tried to crush you many times, remember?
Good luck, asshole. Here I am, in spite of you. In spite of you and the Velociraptors and Sonic the Hedgehog and the guy who ran Comedy Central and BJ Novak, I'm still here.
First time I saw Billy on the street, I was like, he's good. A little too good.
He must be stopped.
He must be stopped. And remember all those attempts on your life and you didn't know who was behind it?
Yeah.
That was me.
That was you. Well, I'm honored, honestly.
I spent hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yes. Well, let's be honest. You have it to spend.
I have it.
I've read the headlines, Tony. You are rich. My God. Can we talk about this?
Yeah.
You were always rich, but now I think you've bought 3 countries or something. You are very wealthy.
I inherited a few countries at birth.
Okay.
Yes. Just and that's just something people should know. I, yeah. As a child, and this is very unusual in an Irish Catholic family, but I inherited 9 islands in Greece.
Oh.
Yeah, and okay. I've been holding on to them, and then I sold them.
Yeah, I... You are a very wealthy man. I respect that about you. I was actually thinking this because
who says that? I respect. You know,
well, you've earned.
Not
your
a big
wealth.
Fan of Trump, but then I found out that he had some money, and I do respect that.
But you've earned your wealth. He got it from his dad, and he's mm-hmm. also a horrible person.
My father gave me nothing. So nothing. Nothing.
But here's what
I wanted was a hug.
Here's what I was gonna say.
Oh shit!
Because there are. You know, there's a question of whether, you know, straight people will go see Bros, right?
Yes.
There's like this big question mark hanging over the movie. And I really hope straight people do go see Bros because it's really, really funny. And we need you to go see it, right? Because we want to make money at the box office so that people keep making these movies. And, you know, we prove to the world that, you know, this is a good thing. We need more of it, that this is a, you know, a worthwhile venture to keep making movies about gay people. But instead of a lot of straight people going, Conan, we could just have you buy one $20 million ticket.
I'll do it.
To go see it.
I'll do it.
And that's as much as we need. That's
is
our
the
whole
ticket
opening
made
weekend
of
right
gold?
There. Yeah, exactly.
And rainforest wood.
That's all it would take.
I'll do it.
Thank you.
No, but also, you know, let me reassure you. First of all, you claim I have all this money. Sonam will tell you I've made some terrible investments.
Yeah, you have.
Really, really bad investments.
Right.
I bought up all the VHS machines about 8 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Because I thought that was coming back.
Yeah.
I've done some terrible, terrible.
I had to loan him a lot of money.
Yeah.
Oh.
She loaned
and
me
I'm
money.
And I'm his assistant.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
I have, but she has it now because, well, anyway, she's got all the money.
Off his back.
Yeah. And also you embezzled from me and you're not even a good embezzler, but I'm so stupid about money that you got away with it.
I told you I was embezzling.
Yeah. And I didn't know what that word meant. And that's why she's not in prison, because they said she did tell you she was embezzling.
I was like, well, I didn't know what it meant. I thought that meant she just had warm, fuzzy feelings.
I'm all embezzly about you. But no, I'll tell you, first of all, Billy, in my opinion, and I believe this passionately, you are funny first. Before I know anything else about you,
yeah.
You're just funny. And in my experience, that is what everyone's hungry for. They're hungry for a movie or a television show or a moment or performance that is funny. You're also a talented actor. And I know I have not seen this film yet, but I'm going to go see this movie.
Thank you.
I know that you are going to be very relatable, and this is going to be good, and it's going to be very funny, but also touching in moments. And I think that is the home run. You're super talented.
Thank you. Yeah, no, and it is. It's weird to say about my own movie, but I've now watched a lot of, you know, early audiences at screenings react to it. It is a really fucking funny movie. Like, it is a...
Again with the language.
Well, I'm
when
sorry.
When a straight person swears,
it's okay.
We've established...
Oh, didn't George Carlin say
it.
That? I think.
It's so weird. What a weird hill for me to die on.
Yeah, only straight people.
Everything, you're like, I haven't pissed... Yeah, but just like, you know, this is one thing I'm not backing down on.
After 30 years, this takes you down.
Yeah, it's like... I just think only straight people should swear. I don't know why I'm Nixon again, but I believe only straight people should swear.
Those are the current topical references that you listen to this podcast to hear.
I meant Cynthia Nixon. That's what I meant. I never said Richard Milhouse, but this is how Cynthia Nixon talks now.
Why? Because she's gay. I'm leaving, Conan. Not all lesbians talk like Richard Nixon. Regardless of what you think.
You're tired of that old trope?
Exactly.
You're so tired of that old trope that all lesbians talk like Richard Nixon.
All lesbians talk like Richard Nixon and all gay men fuck like LBJ. It's just not true. It's just not true. No matter what Hollywood wants you to think.
Halderman, Ehrlichman, let's all get in the car and go see Thelma and Louise. That's the story for us, boys. Then we'll get back to the Watergate and get that safe cracked.
What a strange joke.
It's, what a weird.
What a weird run.
Joke. Yeah, what a weird run.
You're like, don't worry, Billy, you're relatable, just like me, and my lesbian sound like Richard Nixon material. So relatable. You're welcome, Middle America. I'm the next Jeff Foxworthy over here.
I'm worried I just hurt bros. We're going to be like, I don't want to go see that. Nixon's a lesbian in this movie? And he's being raped by a dinosaur?
Pat Nixon fucks Sonic the Hedgehog in Bros? That's the first LGBTQ rom-com?
What's happened to Apatow? He's lost his mind. Damn. You know what? This is why your movie is going to be great and your movie's going to do well is because you are, man, you are funny in an otherworldly, supernatural way. And it doesn't, that's the thing that I think comes first. That's what you have. And then you're using it, I think, to tell this story. But you know that rule number one is the work.
Oh, yeah. And when Nick Stoller and Judd and I sat down and started working on the movie, no one ever thought this is a historic movie. It's the first gay this or the first gay that. We didn't even know at the time.
Right.
You know, we just said, what happened to great comedies that make people laugh out loud consistently for an hour and 45 minutes that also move you and are feel good movies? You know, like that genre of movie has disappeared. You know, I grew up with all these great romantic comedies, as did Nick and as did Judd. They're straight. I'm gay. But we bonded over our love for movies like Moonstruck and When Harry Met Sally and Working Girl and Broadcast News, which is like one of my favorite movies ever.
Me too. Absolutely.
And Tootsie. Yeah. And they've stopped making those movies about straight people. Forget gay people. They don't even make that kind of sophisticated, really funny, smart, moving film about straight people anymore. They've never made them about gay people. So in a way, Bros, while being historic and very new because it happens to be about a gay couple, it's also a throwback to those types of romantic comedies, which they simply do not make.
Yeah.
And when I watch an audience watch Bros, that's the experience they're having. And on top of it, it's also unlike anything a lot of people have ever seen because of the LGBTQ of it all. But they're also just realizing, oh, wow, it's so fun to go to a movie theater and be swept away by a movie like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
are you able to connect with that moment when you think about all you've been through and all the years where it wasn't happening and you're out on the street? Literally out on the street,
literally,
trying to make it happen. And they're trying to put you into a FedEx envelope to send you to Bravo.
Yep.
And now you're having this moment. Are you able to connect to it? Because it isn't a given that you can.
Right. You would understand that because, I mean, part of being me is that I really care about doing a good job, especially with this movie. Like the pressure is on for me personally. It's my first big movie. But then I also have my whole community, you know, waiting to see how I'm going to represent them. And then I have the industry waiting to see how it's going to do. So there was a lot of pressure. Any movie's a lot of pressure, right? Especially a comedy. It's really hard to make a lot of strangers laugh. But this movie had all these other things that were on my mind too. And but you know what? This was such a special, rare experience, this movie. And I did think about all those generations of LGBTQ folks in Hollywood who did not get this opportunity, who would have just, I mean, who would just be shocked to see that this was happening. And the fact that I was getting it and this whole cast of openly LGBTQ actors, that we were getting this opportunity. And, you know, there was a moment we were filming, me and Luke McFarlane, he plays my boyfriend in the movie, and we were filming a scene, this sort of classic New York rom-com walk and talk on Central Park West. And we were filming it and I thought, this is Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan. You know, this is Woody Allen and Diane Keaton. This is all those movies I grew up watching, like all those New York rom-coms. But it's about two gay guys. And no one has ever had this experience. It's being produced by the same studio that makes Jurassic World and Fast and the Furious and the same guy who made Bridesmaids and all these movies that I love. And I thought, I literally told myself, you better fucking pause right now.
Yes. Yeah.
And look around, because this is special. Like, this is a magical thing and you get to be a part of it. And you need to take 5 minutes to stop worrying about it being good and all the things you want it to be, which is very hard for me. But you need to just live in this moment because it really... It's very unique.
I'm glad you did that. I'm glad you had that moment.
And then I screamed at the crew to get back to work and let me have my magical moment.
What are you eating? Where'd you get that profiterole? We're not paying for that.
Slap.
The moment is for me, not you.
Look, you had me because that was a nice moment, but then you were cruel to people who work for you.
I'm sorry.
And that is my mantra.
Oh, I thought you were going a different direction.
Quiet, Sona. Okay. I'm speaking.
There we go. Okay, that makes sense.
No, I didn't do that.
I know. We know you didn't do it. And I didn't really ever treat you badly, Sona. He did. Quiet. Please, cut her mic. I make sure I tell people because, we don't even really talk that much. On this podcast, we don't, it's funny. It's not like the late night show where I'd always end by saying, oh, and here's where you can see. It's not really about projects so much. I'm definitely want to get the word out because Bros is in theaters. It's coming September 30th. And
only in theaters. Don't be a lazy bitch. You got to get up off your couch. You got to actually leave your house and go to a movie theater to see it. But I am telling you, that's what makes it an incredible experience. I think we've all convinced ourselves, I did too, especially during COVID, that watching a movie at home is the same or maybe even better. I am telling you, I have now sat through all these screenings of Bros at multiplexes all over the country. It is, we have forgotten how much fun it is to sit in a dark theater with strangers and escape our bleak, anxiety-ridden lives and all the horrible headlines and just lose ourselves and laugh for 2 hours with hundreds of people in a movie theater.
Oh, I've, the times recently that I've gone back into a movie theater, I've been ecstatic.
It is.
I missed it.
I love it.
It is so fun.
Yeah. And this movie especially is a really special one to experience. It really is historic. And, I really hope everyone checks it out.
Well, they will. I will. I'm looking forward to it. September 30th, which is in just a couple of days. What did you say? Don't be a lazy bitch. I think that's the motto here.
Don't be a lazy bitch. All right. Conan retired that lazy ass.
I didn't retire. I'm talking to you. I'm not at home.
That's true.
Eating cookies. I want to be, but I'm here getting the word out on Bros. Working as hard as I ever did. I want to buy those Greek islands back. I had to sell them. It's so strange because sometimes I have this overwhelming impulse, and we've talked about this, Sona, where I want to tell someone I'm proud of them. And I think that's weird because if I'm proud of somebody, it usually is reserved for, I'm your dad or I was instrumental at the beginning. No, I've famously tried to crush your dreams at every turn, but I really am. I'm proud
Thank
of you.
You.
You're a very good person. I think you're a really principled creator and you're very talented.
Thank you.
And you're doing something, yes, it's important, but your work is also very good.
Thanks.
And so it's an honor to sit with you.
Honor to sit with you. And you were, all jokes aside, a real early adopter and a real early supporter of mine. And I really have always appreciated it.
Well, thank you. It's funny because we make these jokes and then I can just imagine people thinking, Conan really tried to have Billy killed.
That'd be such a strange choice. Honestly, I could use the headlines. So lean in. You don't know what I've been through as a gay man. I couldn't get married. I couldn't have children. And then Conan O'Brien tried to assassinate me.
That's the stuff you always had to cut out of Billy on the Streets was ninjas attacking you.
Yeah.
Which you should have kept in, by the way, because that was I thought very funny.
Really
addition.
Funny bit.
Billy, continued success. Please come back.
Thank you.
I love it when you're here.
Thank you.
And I'm so happy for you. Really.
Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone. Go see Bros.
I I just want your opinion on something. I've been very happily married for a long time now to my lovely wife, Liza. You've known Liza for a very long time. Gorley, yeah. You've met Liza.
She's wonderful.
Wonderful person.
She's right.
And what's
I'm sorry.
Yeah, whatever this is,
whatever
she's
this is,
right.
She's right.
Okay, well, here's my problem. So we grew
case
up
closed.
Different. Okay, we grew up differently.
Oh, yeah.
She grew up in a very sensible home, okay?
Uh-huh.
She has one sister. Everything, when you go to their home, it's very sensible. They're lovely people. They're sane. Everything's, you know, just so. And you contrast that with the way that I grew up. And again, I love my parents and my siblings, but there was a lot of us. And when my parents would go to the grocery store, they would, first of all, before we could go with them, they would have to buy a lot of food.
Oh, yeah.
And then when we could go, we, of course, were just terrible, rotten kids. And we would just throw, because there were so many grocery carts, because there's so many people in the family. My grandmother lived with us, and we would throw all kinds of crud into the grocery cart that we could, you know, processed junk food. And my mother would try to weed it all out at the checkout line. But of course you can't. It's too much. And she's weeding some of it out, but we're sneaking it back in. And then we get home and there's, you know, literally
mess.
Just awful, you know, cheese flavored, puffed up stuff made by, you know, filled with chemicals called dippity dappity doo-doos. Stuff that they later found out was just chock full of dangerous, toxic chemicals. And it's now in a landfill somewhere. But anyway, so that was the kind of way I grew up. So, and we were voracious eaters. And still, you've seen me eat,
it's
Sona.
It's terrifying.
It's terrifying.
It's like, yeah, you eat like you have siblings looming over you.
Yeah, I eat really quickly. So anyway, I was the other day hanging out with Liza, and she just mentioned, she said, yeah, I'm off to the market and get some stuff. And I went, great, great. So I'm just, whatever, as you do, you regress, and I'm getting hungry, and I'm thinking about her coming in with bags and bags of just like food. And I'm forgetting that I married this sensible person.
Yeah.
You know, and so I'm imagining there's going to be Doritos.
Oh, no.
And Captain Crunch and just a giant roast turkey that's got gravy on it already. And there's going to be, you know, some Swedish fish. Oh. And then there's going to be like three milkshakes and a couple of hamburgers that have been,
God,
you know.
Oh, my God. You sound like you're high, though.
I'm just, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
This is,
yeah.
She comes in and she's all happy. And I'm like, oh, good. What'd you get? And she said, well, I got some fresh almonds.
Oh.
And I got some blackberries.
Oh. You know what? Liza isn't right.
No. But then I found out in her defense. And so I'm like, what? What? And then I found out that she went to the farmer's market.
Uh-huh.
But still, yeah. Even if I went to the farmer's market, if I got almonds and blackberries, I would, I don't know, on the way home, I'd stop at a 7-Eleven. And I'd force them at gunpoint to make me a ham sandwich using pieces of Slim Jim. You know, like I would do something to, because I couldn't do it. So I'm getting really hungry. And she went, oh, it's fine. You know, I see her eating a couple of nuts and I'm drinking a little tea with it. And then I'm having my blackberries and everything's just, and I know that her parents would be like, oh yes, good for you. You know, yes.
You're so angry.
And you know, we, her parents were like, well, there's two of us, so we'll have two children. And that just evens things out. Now, six almonds for each of you and let's have some tea. And that was good. Everyone take a nap.
This goes
But first,
deeper.
A walk around the pond.
Oh, this goes deep.
My family.
Do you resent Liza for getting so much attention and love from when she was young and you had
yes,
to share it with?
Yes, doctor.
Yes, okay. That's,
yes.
So this is
yes.
not about almonds and blackberries.
Well, it kind of is. Because when you're hungry and you're 6'4", right? 198 yeah. pounds of pure muscle.
Oh,
okay. Okay. Well, I've been Party. To your house and you guys always have a lot of good food.
I know. I was just in this moment looking at, it was just making, I was looking at these almonds, raw almonds, not even salted and roasted.
Oh, okay, that's problematic.
Raw, because roasted an almond, that might have some dangerous nutrients in there.
Oh, my God. You are charged.
No, I'm just, am I wrong? And so
no,
I actually.
She cares about your health.
I cupped my hands. And I put some almonds in there and I put
so
a few
sad.
Blackberries and
so
I really did feel like I was someone who had been, my plane had gone down 3 weeks ago and I had wandered through
and I was about to die, but I found a couple of nuts and a couple of berries, and I was like, blah, 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 and just was stuffing them into my face.
Oh, man.
And then people were coming over then, and they were like, oh, hey, Conan. And I'm like, ah! And I had blackberry around my lips. I was like, ah! You know, when a vampire sees a crust, I was like, don't touch my blackberries. And of course, she's perfectly fine. She's like, oh man, am I stuffed?
If she brought home Doritos and like a ham sandwich made of Slim Jims, you would have eaten it. You would have been really happy. Then afterwards, you would have been really upset at yourself, wouldn't you?
No. Okay, I would have blacked out in a reverie.
I remember when you and I...
I would have awoken with a sensual high.
I remember when you and I ate the McRib sandwich.
Well, let's not get in trouble with a major company.
Is it? Why can't we talk about McDonald's? I love McDonald's,
let's
but
not
their McRib
get in trouble with a major
garbage.
Company? What?
I have never
the
offended...
the thing I've ever heard.
I've never offended a major company.
I don't ever want to hear it from you again. Let's not get in trouble with a major... You wouldn't even name the name of the company.
I'm loving it.
Apology.
I'm loving it.
Oh my God. Let's
I'm
not get in trouble with
it.
A major company.
Do, 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 do.
Don't do that.
I'm loving it.
What a sellout. You're such a sellout.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Biggest weenie I've ever met.
I will not offend any group of white men that have formed a corporate concern for profit. They shall be protected on Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend.
Oh my God. That's why you're mad at Liza. She didn't bring home a Big Mac.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I could have killed a Big Mac. Man, that company does it right. Always have.
God.
And always will.
I'm a Burger King fan myself.
Yeah. Well, them too. You can't go wrong with those big companies.
I'm a Taco Bell boy.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You know who's good at drilling for oil? Texaco. In my opinion. Keep at it, fellas. Get that liquid gold. Yep. Anywho, no, I think my wife's right. And in her defense, she was just going to the farmer's market, but she's always been that way. I think on our first date, I said, do you want to get lunch? And she said, oh, I'm okay. I just had two walnuts and some green tea. And I almost jumped out a window because for me, lunch involves at least four whole hams.
A family of pigs.
A mom, and they've been dipped in caramel.
Oh my God.
Anyway, my apologies to my in-laws and my wife.
And to McDonald's.
And to
no!
Ham.
No apology to McDonald's.
Wait, what?
I said the McRib was garbage.
It's not garbage.
That's pretty bad.
It's not. Liar. Do, 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 do. I'm loving it. Keep making those McRibs. Whatever you do is right. Well, anyway, now on to Bell helicopters. Maker of military helicopters and damn good ones.
We're done. Stop.
All right. I'm
okay,
done here.
Good.
Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. With Conan O'Brien, Sonam Ovsesian, and Matt Gourley. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Joanna Solitaroff, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Cody Fisher at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Take it away, Jimmy. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. Engineering by Will Beckton. Additional production support by Mars Melnick. Talent booking by Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Britt Kahn. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It too could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.